Hollywood is rated LGBT radio, starring your host, Rob Watson!
Good evening, good evening. Welcome to Rated LGBT Radio, and I am your host, Rob Watson. Tonight, we are pretty much kicking off the Pride season. And, of course, on Rated LGBT Radio, we can only do that with a bit of controversy. So we are bringing you the opening controversial story that is launching the Pride season around the country. I know for me personally, this weekend in Santa Cruz, California, we have Pride going. I am in charge of the main stage with a lot of great things happening there. There are celebrations going on, like I said, all over. This is the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall Riot and started kind of the snowball of Pride in general. In Los Angeles, Pride started the year after that. In Santa Cruz here, it started 4 years later. Santa Cruz is celebrating its 45th annual Pride celebration. So Pride is all around. In a local town out here in California, in Dublin specifically, its first openly gay council member, whose name is Sean Kumaji, thought it would be really a wonderful thing for his town to put out the Pride flag on City Hall just to recognize June as the month of Pride. It's not unprecedented. Our former president, President Obama, lit the White House up in rainbow colors to commemorate Pride when he was president. It's something that has been done by government officials throughout the country in various venues. Unbeknownst to the council member, however, he was going to run into not only flack, but some of the most vile, homophobic, transphobic flack you can imagine. The controversy was huge, and he is standing to fight back against what he thought would be an absolute no-brainer. Before we bring on the council member, I want to bring on my co-host, the beloved journalist, Brody Levesque. Welcome to the show, Brody.
Good evening, Rob, and good evening to our listeners. And happy Pride, folks. I know we're a couple of days early with June, but I want to wish all of you happy Pride. You and your cohorts there in Santa Cruz should have a lot of fun. So happy Pride Santa Cruz to you, Rob.
Yeah, no, it's going to be great. And one of the people we will be featuring on our stage is a mutual friend of ours, Brody Ray, who is a country western singer who is gained notoriety on the show America's Got Talent, where he got a standing ovation and blew the judges away, and is a prominent transgender artist. So he's going to make a live appearance on our stage out here. He's making the circuit in a lot of Pride areas. So it should be really a fantastic thing.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun, and Brody's a really good guy. So a little background for our listeners. The councilman had actually run two proposals for the city council agenda. One was a proclamation for Pride Month itself, which passed unanimously, didn't have an issue. And then there was the flag. And that didn't go quite as well. The second part of it was that the councilman tried, again, gently to effect a compromise, amending the initial proposal to see if we could do it for one day. That didn't work out either. But what makes this story, I think, kind of interesting, especially as we're moving into the 2020 election cycle, and in particular really looking at one of the candidates, South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg, is that I had the honor of speaking with this councilman, and what really struck me is he's a Navy vet like Pete, the same level, articulate, intelligent, compassionate, empathetic tones that Pete's got. And it was just kind of cool to talk to this person, as just, you know, listening to him, it was just like, oh, this is like I've heard this before from, you know, the last few weeks of covering Pete Buttigieg. And the interesting thing was, is that what the councilman really wanted and what he told me when I interviewed him was that the idea of the proposal was to be a positive conversation starter that unfortunately took a wrong turn. But then he followed that up with something else that I think is just so important, and that is what, and you'll be able to ask him this here in a second, but what he told me was, rather than dwell or hone in on public comments, he said it was much more important to talk with each other rather than at each other. So, yeah, I'm very excited. This is an up-and-coming young California politician. He's got a lot of good things going for him. And I unabashedly, you know, think that he's just one of these great guys. He's just one of those politicians that, you know, you can really identify with. And I say that as a political reporter who's rather cynical about politicians from the get-go. So with that, Rob, I'll give it to you.
Well, yes, I think by all means, with all that harsh criticism there, Brody, we need to bring the councilman on so he can defend himself here in our heated forum. Welcome to the show, Sean.
Well, thank you, Rob, and thank you, Brody, for having me. Happy Pride to you both.
No, yeah, and to you too. And it is much more of a challenge than you thought. I want to back up though a little bit to what were your objectives when you ran to be a council member in the first place in Dublin? What were your kind of visions for what you wanted to accomplish originally?
Well, in Dublin, you know, we are a growing city. I don't know if you saw in recent news, but we were, I think it's top 10 as far as percentage of growth in the country. We have a lot of good things going for us as a growing city. You know, we have a lot of attention in the terms of the housing crisis and what we're doing to help address that. But a lot of families are also moving to Dublin because it is a community-oriented, safe place within the Bay Area that is still, compared to other places, relatively affordable. Now, we have our, you know, fair share of challenges. You know, we have a rapidly changing community with the growth. Our schools right now are impacted, and there's a lot of concerns around the growth. My background is, as Brody mentioned, I served 10 years active duty in the U.S. Navy, switched over to the reserves, and have done a lot of work in federal government and military assignments. And my goal in running was to be a voice of moderation on the council, to really help us look for some creative solutions to some of the challenges that we're facing, but also help us to lay out a vision and a roadmap for what we want to look like 20, 30 years from now, and stop, hopefully, get away from being reactionary in how we're considering our community.
That's incredibly important. I want to take you back also. What is your personal impression of the rainbow flag? What does that mean to you as both a symbol, and when did it fall on your radar as something noticeable?
You know, I grew up in the 90s and early 2000s, so my entire adult life has been consumed by the debate over marriage equality, don't ask, don't tell, the transgender military ban. These are things that I have personal experience with, and I've witnessed, you know, my friends, colleagues, and comrades in arms tackle these tough issues when it impacts their personal life. So for me, the pride flag does two things. It's a symbol of our storied history as an LGBTQ community. You know, it's 50 years since Stonewall, 4 decades since Harvey Milk made office as one of the first openly gay politicians and then was subsequently assassinated. But still, only 4 years since we've achieved marriage equality, less than a decade since Don't Ask, Don't Tell was ended. So we have made a lot of progress, but at the same time, we still have a lot of work to do. And for me, the flag is a symbol of that history and the continual work that we need to accomplish. The other thing that I think that it does for me is it symbolizes safe space. You know, like I said, growing up in the 90s, when it wasn't always so safe to be openly LGBT within the community, when you saw that flag on a business or on a public place, you had a sense that you could be your authentic self there and not be persecuted or not be targeted, that place was safe. So I think it sends that important message to our LGBTQ community.
I think that's very true. And I also want to kind of point out that, and I realize that there are people in the conservative Christian community that rankle at the idea that the rainbow could be used by LGBTQ people and feel like it's been misappropriated, like they own it. But for others who are kind of cross-impressed with both the historic religious value of the rainbow and are impressed by its use by LGBTQ community, the rainbow, even biblically, was exactly what you just described. It was a symbol of turmoil ending, peace coming back, and a promise for safety and peace for all. So it has, even in that scope of kind of human history, that theme to it as well. So I think that impression that you have is poignant on an even deeper level than just an equality flag. So what was your idea in creating this proposal and bringing it to the city council? What were your thoughts as you put that all together?
Well, maybe I was a little naive. I don't know. I mean, I really thought of it as Brody had mentioned, you know, a conversation starter, kind of something to kick off and recognize our LGBTQ community, which, by the way, I'm getting a real sense that in the outskirts of the East Bay Area, in the suburbs, there are serious gaps in services. We have, you know, our most vulnerable in our LGBTQ community, such as our youth, our elderly, and people of color, don't necessarily have access to the services in the outskirts of the Bay Area like they would in your more metropolitan areas like San Francisco, San Jose, or Oakland. I really wanted to kind of shine a light on that gap and use this as a launching pad to talk about services and how we identify those service needs and then how we get the requisite funding in place, whether it's, you know, through our own city and our own budget or through partnership programs, through nonprofits, CBOs, and other government agencies. That's really where I was going with this. I didn't think that the flag was going to be the end of the conversation. It was supposed to be the beginning.
Right. And what was... Take us through the reaction you got.
Well, I mean, you know, there was, I think unfairly, you know, that we might have within the media, it's been conflated between a couple of public comments that were made that were homophobic and transphobic and the action that we took. Like Brody mentioned in the intro, you know, we did pass for the first time in our city's history, an LGBTQ pride proclamation, and I'm very proud of that. When it came down to the second motion, which was to raise the rainbow flag, I think that the council really went down a road where we were thinking more about the precedent that we were setting, how we would handle future requests, the policy around raising a flag, which we've never done before. It would have been unprecedented for us to raise any other flag other than our national, state, and city flag on our municipal flagpoles. So we kind of really started to get into that conversation, and it became evident that what we needed to do was probably have a flag policy discussion at a later time. Now, I contended that we didn't have to have a flag policy before we raised the rainbow flag, that we had the right to exercise our government speech. And if anyone were to bring forth another proposal, we would consider that flag raising or that expression of government speech independently as a separate item. But the council did not feel comfortable that night in doing that, and so it got voted down.
And I realize these were lightning rods for the media, but where did these other comments, which were pretty extreme, come from? And even granted, it was from a few, but what was the impetus behind those?
I think there were, you know, certain community members who organized around coming out to voice their opinion on this subject, and you know, God bless America. We have the First Amendment right, so people get to say what they want to say. Public comment is a venue for them to say that. I would say the one thing that I regret in retrospect is that, you know, we do as elected officials, we have a duty to address falsehoods and to address hateful language and call that out from our positions. And, you know, in retrospect, I probably should have done that. But, facing these kind of comments for me is nothing new. You know, like I said, growing up my entire adult life through the battles over marriage equality and Don't Ask, Don't Tell, I've been hearing these kinds of arguments and false equivalencies my entire life. So it really was not a shock to me. It was nothing new. And in the moment, I made a conscious decision not to give those comments extra space by legitimizing them and discussing them from that forum. In my mind, it was not the topic at hand. And I really didn't want to get derailed from addressing, you know, what I wanted to do there, which was to raise the pride flag as a symbol to our LGBTQ community, that Dublin is a welcome and safe place for them, which, by the way, I still believe is true.
Brody?
Councilman, take us through what's happened since you and I spoke last week. And there's been a change of heart, apparently, by the city's mayor and another of your peers on city council. Why don't you take our listeners through where the city of Dublin is now with this issue?
Well, I was really heartened by the reaction from the community. There was a grassroots effort amongst the community to rally support around not only the issue of raising the pride flag, but outward expressions of acceptance and a safe haven for our LGBTQ community. You know, from the community, it organically grew from a Facebook group, and they were looking at, you know, displaying pride flags on their residences, having a rally in front of City Hall in June, having a pride picnic that is being organized June 15th. I got a call from a council member, openly gay council member in Emeryville, John Bowders, and he wanted to know how he could support, and we came up with that he would have a solidarity event in Emeryville, raising a second flag there, one for Dublin and one for Emeryville. So all of these, you know, calls for support were really heartening. And I think at the same time, you know, community members, there was a certain amount of, you know, negative attention in the media around what happened. And community members and other elected officials began reaching out to those who had voted no. And I think there were a lot of heartfelt discussions. And, you know, I really feel like at least partially the advances that we make as an LGBTQ community happen through the work of our allies and through those kind of empathetic discussions and through changed minds. And I think that's ultimately what happened. There were a lot of discussions that happened that helped them to realize that maybe what they did was perceived as hurtful amongst the community. And they decided to bring back the item. So the mayor called for us to have a special meeting next week where we would reconsider this item. And there's good indication that that may pass.
So ironically, even though it was much more contentious than you had thought it would be, you did actually get exactly what you had hoped for. You started the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, that's the silver lining. I actually, it is very ironic because if we had passed it unanimously, despite the comments, there would have been no daylight shed on this issue at all, right? It would have just been another Bay Area city passing a Pride proclamation and raising the rainbow flag for LGBTQ Pride Month. No big story there. No awareness raised. But because of this, I think we've really shown on a light that this conversation still needs to happen, even in 2019, even in the Bay Area. It's important that we're talking about our LGBTQ community, how we express support for them, but also what are their needs and how can we support them through services and funding.
that's a great tag there. Brody.
Well, that's a point that I'd like to make. When the councilman and I had our initial discussions, and as I told the councilman, the story was actually given to me from a Facebook friend. It hadn't started to hit the media yet, except for a political blog. And when I looked at it, there is a certain amount or a sense, and the councilman did agree with me on this, that it's almost as if LGBTQ rights, particularly in the Bay Area, was supposed to be this homogenous, all-encompassing, inclusive thing. And that's just simply not the truth. You know, the dynamics of the different cities and the municipalities around the San Francisco Bay are such that they're an absolute, I think, reflection of the rest of the United States. And I think what the councilman did was he actually did put the conversation out there that people really needed to have this discussion. I think that a lot of times, and I'm not really pointing my finger at California so much, but in more progressive areas, there is the taken for granted when it comes down to these issues. And I think that as the councilman and his colleagues on the Dublin Council saw, and the media, when they finally got around to covering it, saw, was that, you know, we still have issues that affect our community that are extremely divisive. And they still need to be talked about. And I think the main thing I want to point out here, and why I was so interested in having the councilman on tonight, is, he's got the ability to foster, I think, conversations on a much greater scale, particularly with our LGBTQ elders and our trans youth and our others, in the talking with conversations instead of the talking at conversations. As a national political reporter, one of the problems that I'm constantly running into is this nonsense of the talking at, the talking at, the talking at. And one of the things, Councilman, I think that, you brought it up in our conversation, it was how critically important it is to have these conversations in a what type of approach as opposed to an at mode, if you were. Rob?
Yeah, and one of the things, Congressman, you wrote an op-ed piece, and which you kind of alluded to some of the things already that you talked about in that piece. But one thing that kind of goes along with what Brody was just saying, you pointed out that these contentious arguments where it's one-upmanship and it gets escalated has a huge detrimental effect on the most vulnerable in our community who are listening quietly on the sidelines. Do you want to kind of extrapolate on that point?
Yeah, I had seen this article recently from a study that was published in Pediatrics where they talked about during the height of the debate over marriage equality and when Prop 8 in California, which would basically outlaw same-sex marriage, was being debated, that during these periods of public policy debate around LGBTQ issues that there was evidence that there were spikes in bullying amongst LGBTQ or perceived LGBTQ youth. So I'm mindful of that, you know, and one of the things I talk about in my op-ed is that, you know, it's important that we have these conversations. I think there is a time and a place to push back and to express outrage and to fight for our rights. But there's also a time and place to have a thoughtful, empathetic conversation where you're listening to what the other person is saying, giving them the benefit of the doubt that maybe they're speaking from a place where they may not have extreme cultural competency around LGBTQ issues. And maybe what they're saying is not intended to be as hurtful as we are taking it as LGBTQ people. And I think that it's through these conversations that we have that we were able to change public opinion around marriage equality, for example. And we were able to move within a period of 6-7 years? We were able to move from Prop 8 being passed in California as a ballot measure to having full marriage equality and a majority of popular opinion on our side on this issue. I really think it's around those conversations. It was because of those conversations that happened.
No, I agree.
I'd like to.
No,
go ahead.
I just want to say that my other radio show out in Santa Cruz is on the most conservative radio station in our little pocket of the world, and ironically addressing the more contentious part of our community here. And everything you're talking about is why that is where I want to be with that show, because I want to be where we can have the conversation with and not be, you know, on our side of the aisle, them on their side, kind of yelling across and demonizing each other. So I really applaud your efforts there. Brody, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. I was just going to, for our listeners, if you'd like to read the councilman's guest opinion, it's at www.ebar.com. That's my good colleagues, Cynthia Lair and the crew at the Bay Area Reporter newspaper in San Francisco. And the column is entitled "Why the Pride Flag Still Matters," and it's a great piece, and I highly recommend that you read it, Rob.
Yeah, Congressman, I know we only have a limited time with you tonight. Is there anything we haven't asked you that we should have?
Well, no, I would just say that you know, another point I want to make, and I allude to this in my op-ed as well, is how important allies are in this conversation. And I think there was a general feeling probably amongst allies within my community that this was a no-brainer. You know, this was a small ask. It's going to go through. There's not going to be any problems. Because I put it out there. You know, I put it out on social media to some of my friends and to some people in political organizing that this was coming. And no one expected the level of backlash, and no one expected that it wouldn't pass. And but it's through the work of allies that we are able to make progress on this issue. Because no matter what, LGBTQ population is always going to be an extreme minority, and we're never going to be able to do this all on our own. It's going to be through cooperative work with our allies that we're going to be able to continue to make progress on these issues. And there's still a lot of work to be done, particularly for our transgender populations and our transgender youth, particularly for our LGBTQ people of color, and around issues like the military transgender ban that we're still fighting over. So there's a lot of work to be done, and I'm glad that we were able to raise awareness within not only my community, but the Bay Area about that work.
Yeah, no, and it goes back to your point about making arguments. And you had brought up Harvey Milk earlier. Of course, Harvey Milk is famous for advising us for on into the future that our best argument was simply to be known for who we are, and that once people knew who we are, then arguments that are thrown out are then thrown up against what people know us to be from their own firsthand experience. And I think that's what happened here. A lot of the arguments that were thrown out, if people actually knew gay people and transgender people, to hear some of the arguments that are as old and long debunked as they could be, and they're thrown up against the character of people that are real, you don't really have to verbalize a response to them. Brody, comment?
Yeah.
I you know, one of the things that I think is critically important here is that, especially with the vitriol and the general divisiveness that we're seeing in political conversations at all levels, and since Trump took office in particular, I think, and Sean's absolutely correct, we really do need to hone in on these conversations so that people don't talk about us in a way that makes us an object versus, you know, a human being. I think that the most important thing, and particularly for our trans brothers and sisters, is that we do have to have these conversations, and we have to make sure that the, you know, it's the humanity that's exposed, not the vitriol and all the other things that are exposed. I just don't think that that serves any real purpose, you know, at the end of the day. And I know, Sean, you're going to have to run here pretty shortly, but Councilman, I, again, thank you so much for your time, both now and, of course, previously when you were so gracious to grant me the interview time. I really appreciated it. Rob?
Yeah, Sean, I just want to thank you as well for, first of all, for what you've done, for taking a stand, for being a leader. As Brody pointed out, you're kind of starting out your political career. What, as a final question, there is a block of Democrats that are vying for the top spot, one of which has risen from not much higher than where you are right now. He was merely a mayor of a city in Indiana and is now actually a serious contender. What have you learned from this that you would advise to the group as they talk and make points for themselves on the national stage?
Well, I don't know that I would ever be presumptuous enough to advise presidential candidates on what they should do, but I'm watching very closely at the well, I'm watching very closely at the vast Democratic field. I mean, I'm a Democrat. I've been, you know, operating a lot in the partisan side of political organizing for a few years now. So I'm watching, you know, with interest. You know, I'm really surprised, pleasantly surprised to see Mayor Pete kind of pick up in popularity. He ran for DNC chair a couple of years ago, and it was hardly a blip. You know, no one really even paid him any attention. So I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just the right time, or maybe we had to go through so many cycles with Trump before his style of leadership and rhetoric caught on. But it's captured the imagination of the public, and for that I'm thankful. It's exciting to see an openly LGBTQ candidate actually be considered viable, and also to be so authentic in who he is, and for that to be on full display for America. So for that I thank him, and I look forward to seeing what happens from his campaign. But there's a lot of great Democrats running, and I'm just gonna sit and watch and kind of wait until next year and see what happens.
Yeah. Well, and I think you are reflecting a lot of those qualities that you just described yourself in your career as well. So I want to thank you for that and for being who you are. And you have a seat here on this show whenever you want it. So we hope you, you know, if you have additional thoughts and things happen, you feel free to come back.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I want to thank you for the time and for giving us a space to have this conversation. And you know, I mentioned this in my op-ed as well, and that is I feel that I am extremely privileged as far as my experience as a gay man. Despite everything, despite, you know, subtle challenges, I grew up with a family that embraced and loved me, with friends and colleagues that supported me, and I feel extremely privileged to be in a position from even the city council where I can speak for those who would otherwise feel they can't voice their opinion or speak up for themselves. And that is truly an honor, and it'll be an honor of my life to continue that.
Well, the fact that you do it with dignity and with intelligence and sensitivity, I think is incredibly fortifying for those who cannot speak for themselves. And I think we're all out there for that group of people, but it's very inspiring. And I think what you're doing is amazing, and really am glad that you're going to continue doing it.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, our pleasure. Brody, any final words?
No, I appreciate it very much. And, Councilman, I'm fairly certain that we will see a lot more good news from you in the future. And I, for one, look forward to it. So thank you.
And
well,
and,
Rob.
And with that, thank you so much, Councilman. And we really appreciated having you on the show tonight. So, Brody, it's just us kids now.
Just us. Okay. So
what else?
The parent.
Yeah.
The parents are gone, so we can cause trouble. I like that idea.
Really. So we
had
a lot of stuff this week. Speaking about the kids.
God.
The kid in chief has been tantruming. Can't even speak about it. Tantruming all over the place. Robert Mueller gave a report or gave a commentary on his report. What is your take on what's been going on?
Well, the first thing is that I think it's really critically important that people understand that the special counsel made two very salient points that people need to pay attention to. The first is he stated again, for the record, okay, that had he found something to, quote unquote, exonerate the president of the United States, he would have done so. Okay? He did not. That's the most important thing. Okay? The second thing was he was very crystal clear that because of Justice Department policies, his hands were tied in terms of indicting a sitting president for a criminal charge of obstruction of justice. And then he said, following that he had more or less put it in the hands of the people who can. In other words, the Congress of the United States. Now, yesterday in San Francisco, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi was a guest at the Commonwealth Club. And one of the obvious things that came up was talking about, well, what about impeachment? And I think that it's kind of important that people understand the speaker's position at this point is we need to have all the facts out there. You know, impeachment in and of itself is a political thing. It's not, and this is a distinction that needs to be made. Impeachment is not a criminal trial. Impeachment is not bringing a person up on criminal charges and then that's, you know, we're going to proceed down that route. Impeachment is strictly a political creature, and the intent was to get a bad actor out of the highest office in the land, or for that matter, any office that, you know, held what we call public trust accountability, whether it's the president, the vice president, you know, a member of the cabinet, Senate, a judge. That's the vehicle and the threshold, okay, for doing it. And that responsibility rests with the United States House of Representatives. Speaker Pelosi has indicated, and she did again yesterday in San Francisco, that the most important thing for her is that the American public gets all these facts laid out in these hearings that will be going on, particularly Adam Schiff of California's Intelligence Committee, Jerry Nadler of New York with House Judiciary, Chairman Cummings of Maryland and his Oversight Committee, and Waters and hers, all of these committees to take this whole thing up and put it out there. Well, our person in the White House went off today, okay, you know, in a literal, as you put it, very aptly, temper tantrum, okay, attacking the whole idea of that. And then the worst part of it was is he kept lying. it was one right after another. The tweets that really, really will get you going, if you look at them, you know, is just ridiculous. But then what he said to the press corps, he traveled to Colorado Springs today to speak before the commencement ceremony at the United States Air Force Academy there. And as he was getting ready to depart, he, you know, was talking to my colleagues in the press. And this kind of shows you the depth of his ignorance. And this is the first thing he said. And he was asked a question about impeachment. And he said this: "I don't see how. They can because they're possibly allowed," meaning the Congress. "I can't imagine the courts allowing it." Okay. And then he added, "To me, it's a dirty word. The word impeach, it's a dirty, filthy, disgusting word." Okay. So the important takeaway from that comment, okay, was the courts allowing it. He really, truly does not understand, okay, that this is not any way, shape, or form a criminal thing. Yeah, it's just like, really?
Right.
And then he fired back with this one, okay? There was another question from another one of my colleagues, okay? Here's the next thing. And again, this is kind of pointing at the investigation. "It all came out there was nothing to do with Russia. The whole thing is a scam. It's a giant presidential harassment. And honestly, I hope it goes down as one of my greatest achievements. I've exposed corruption like no one knew existed." Now, of course, the question, you know, is, well, what corruption are you actually talking about here? You know, go ahead.
Yeah, that's what kind of concerns me, because I've heard reports that he is asking Barr to investigate Australia and the UK and different ones of our allies that he perceives having been somehow, behind this investigation of him. And it's like this. I mean, he's bringing in paranoia on a level that Nixon never even dreamed of. I mean, it's like we're really talking, you know, what was it, Captain Queeg on the old movie with Humphrey Bogart, where he's worrying about the strawberries. Old movie reference.
And I got the movie reference. I mean, but see, the thing is, then he switches into the lie mode. Now, he's all aboard the presidential aircraft. He's flying someplace over, you know, who knows what. And here comes a tweet. Okay, and here's a tweet: "Robert Mueller came to the Oval Office along with other potential candidates, seeking to be named the director of the FBI. He had already been in that position for 12 years. I told him no. The next day, he was named special counsel, a total conflict of interest." Nice. So let's disassemble this tweet. First of all, okay, Mueller left the office of FBI director when President Obama was still in office, okay, number one. Number two, okay, there's no do-over, and you have one shot at being FBI director, and then that's it. Okay, the law was rewritten so that there would never, ever, ever be another J. Edgar Hoover. Okay, you serve as FBI director when you're done. That's it. You're finished. Okay, so the next part of this tweet, okay, "I told him no. The next day he was named special counsel." Okay, None of that is true. Now, how much of that has to do with the fact that the president's obviously suffering from a few other issues besides lying is anybody's guess. And this, again, this is kind of been what's going on. People ask me, Rob, all the time, well, you know, how low can this guy go? And I'm sorry, there's no bar with him. I mean, virtually. Yeah. It's
right.
We saw this earlier when he was, you know, on Memorial Day weekend. Okay. You know, he actually said Happy Memorial Day while he was in Japan. And it's like, Happy Memorial Day? Really? But it got worse. Then we come to find out that the White House, okay, he was supposed to tour a United States aircraft carrier, the USS Wasp, and she was berthed with most of the rest of the vessels of the United States 7th Fleet, which is stationed out of Yokohama Bay in Japan. And there's a particular destroyer there named after two Navy admirals. And the son and grandson happened to also have their name. Although he retired as a Navy captain, he was a United States senator, and the president of the United States was coming, and so the Navy was told to either cover up the destroyer's name or move the thing or put it where he couldn't see it. The name of that destroyer, that would be the USS John McCain. Now, this is where it gets even worse, okay? That particular destroyer, 2 years ago, was involved in a collision, okay? All right? Trump's in office when this happens, okay? The destroyer's in a collision, and 10 people get killed, all right? Then we find out, not only, okay, did the White House want this destroyer moved, but they didn't want any member of its crew anywhere near the president. And when the captain of the McCain that sent, you know, a small contingent of his crew over to represent, they were turned away. This is from Navy sources. So, I mean, this is basically petty on steroids, all right? You know, and these are just two examples of, you know, the weak in Trump. There's no bar that this guy won't, you know, there's no bar, you know, at all.
Yeah, no, it's awful. And I would also suggest our listeners on the McCain, USS McCain issue, Meghan McCain, John McCain's daughter, who is one of the co-hosts of The View, talked about this thing. They opened up The View this morning about this specific story. Although, Brody, you just brought in a little some nuances that they didn't even discuss there that I think are pretty telling. But I really think her comments, being the grieving daughter of the late senator, are poignant to listen to. So I would encourage people to seek out that conversation that they had. But Brody, to your point, one of the things mm-hmm. that I also read was that in a conversation apparently previously with his own lawyer, Donald Trump's speculation about the quote-unquote conflict of interest of Robert Mueller had to do with his mm-hmm. feeling that Robert Mueller had not had some sort of fees reimbursed to him from a Trump property, and that potentially was the source of his vendetta or perceived vendetta against the president, which says a lot of things. Because one, to anybody listening to that, in fact, I think the lawyer told Trump directly that was silly. And to most of us hearing that as a reason why somebody would fake what Robert Mueller was doing in terms of his work is ludicrous. But it speaks to Donald Trump's psyche that, you know, how when you criticize somebody or you perceive something like that, it's because you're seeing your own personal reaction in that behavior. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what the takeaway is that is how petty Donald Trump is. And he expects others to be equally as petty.
Well, I'll give you a perfect example of that. Okay. Tonight at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, here comes another tweet from the White House. okay, on June 10th, the United States will impose a 5% tariff on all goods coming into our country from Mexico until such time as illegal migrants coming through Mexico and into our country stop, all caps. The tariff will gradually increase until the illegal immigration problem is remedied. Now, I don't think that a lot of the average Trump supporters who shop at Walmart are going to be terribly appreciative of even more price rollbacks suddenly becoming price roll-ups because of these policies. The Chinese tariffs are
right.
already costing American businesses money. This is going to hit consumers even harder, and here's why. If you start talking about the grocery store, now you're talking about imports from Mexico, fruits, vegetables. If you start talking about replacement car parts or even cars in general, you're talking Mexican manufacture. If you're talking about cheap electronics and some other things that are done, you know, on a local basis outside of China, you're talking Mexico. You know, so essentially, you know, he seems to think that we impose these tariffs and it'll just put the brakes on everything and it's only we'll have fair and equal trade or Mexico will stop all the illegal immigrants, blah, blah, blah. He's clueless. These tariffs only hurt American consumers. They don't do a damn thing, okay, to, you know, the countries that they're targeted to or the peoples that they're targeted to. This is just bad policy. This is him, as you just put so well, in his own little petty way, okay, because he's not getting his way. And he also, just this week, had a U.S. district judge stop about $1.5 billion that he wanted dumped into his little wall, okay, because, no, the judge was like, yeah, you can't do that. This is Congress's purse area, not yours. You know, so it's he's getting increasingly frustrated with the system, and he's trying to find, by any means possible, a way to circumvent it. But at the same time, he does not understand, you know, the damages he's doing. He just went to Congress to ask for, I forget how many billion dollars, okay, to help out the soybean farmers, who, by the way, China today has now completely cut off all soybean imports from the United States, okay? So what happens is not only are American consumers getting nailed, okay, for the you know, basically higher tariff tax, if you want to call that, on manufactured goods coming in from China, all right? But now they're also, taxpayers are paying, again, to subsidize the farmers that are getting screwed by the same tariffs. You know, this type of thing, all right, suddenly becomes very problematic because sooner or later, something's got to give economically. And when it does, his little hot economy that he's always bragging about is going to come crashing down around his head. So, yeah, petty, that's just another way of describing it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, very, very weird. I want to switch gears to a whole different area, leaving Washington altogether, and just get your feedback. Apparently, they opened the previously closed case of Jussie Smollett in Chicago and made public details behind that. What did we find out that we didn't know?
An investigative journalist for CBS2 Chicago, Ginger Maddox, was reviewing case files that were released by the Chicago Police Department and by the Illinois State's Attorney's Office. And in the case files, they found reports that Smollett had texted at least one of the two Asandario brothers to procure cannabis and some ecstasy and maybe even possibly cocaine. And the amount, dollar amount that was mentioned was what Smollett had alleged was for training for his, you know, his fitness training for the show that he was on. And the police concluded, well, no, that was to procure the drugs. So, you know, once again, here's another damaging fact. Now, CBS2 is continuing to basically dive into the case. And I said from the get-go, this was problematic. It keeps getting more and more problematic. And it goes right to the heart of the credibility, you know, of Jussie Smollett, you know. And obviously there's a credibility issue there, a big one. So, yeah, that happened, you know.
Yeah, it also seemed like, because a couple of things impressed me. One was facts that you had actually had gotten wind of early on that you and I talked about offline are coming out as having been true, even though I guess there wasn't enough substantiation for journalists to publicly put that out there, which was pretty interesting. But also there seemed to be some indication that early on the prosecutor's office was determining that they weren't going to do much with it. Like it was set up that way. Did I read that correctly?
No, you did read that correctly. There was a point where the Illinois state attorney for Cook County, she had made the determination that because of communication that she'd had with Smollett's family, that it would be a conflict of interest. And the other part of it was that, you know, when they got into the nitty gritty of it, there was no way that she felt that she was going to be able to successfully prosecute him, you know, even though these are, I think it was a misdemeanor charge. It was the type of thing where she didn't feel that, you know, it was basically she could do that or her office could be able to do that. And at the same time, you know, we're having more and more relevant, you know, revelations about, you know, the actual truth of the matter. Yeah, and some of which, you know, sources in the Chicago police had mentioned to me and a couple of other people that were poking around in the story. So it's unfortunate, but it's, you know, again, part and parcel. The one thing that I said, and I've said this to you before, the American judicial and justice system has a serious problem because it's skewed towards celebrity and wealth. It's very uneven.
Right.
It doesn't work. And here's another example of why it doesn't work.
There you go.
And that's really.
And we're
the end
pretty
of the day,
much. Yeah, and we're out of time. So thank you, Brody, for your brilliance and your wonderfulness and everything you do. I want to thank again our council member, Sean, who is on, and everything that he's been through and continuing to do brilliant work, and we wish him the best in how that story unfolds. I also want to point people to out in Santa Cruz this weekend is going to be a great show. We're launching Pride, but also I have an exclusive interview with singer Rufus Wainwright, who is performing here locally, but I had a chance to get with him, and we have an interview that we will air at that time. And he has some pretty sensitive, poignant stuff himself. It was a really good interview. I'm anxious for you to hear it. You can hear that on www.ksco.com, 7 p.m. Saturday night Pacific time, 10 p.m. Eastern. And for Brody and myself, we will be back here next week on Rated LGBT Radio. Very excited to bring you the stories of the week and lots of other interesting insight, guests, and all that jazz. So for us, hope you have a great night.
You've been listening to Rated LGBT Radio.